Relationships rule. That's my motto. I'm Janice Porter, and I love to share the power of relationship marketing to help grow and impact business. I've grown my business by building and nurturing relationships, and I'd like to help you do the same. Welcome to the Relationships Rule podcast, where connection means everything. Welcome, everyone. And today I'm joined by Lisa Danahy, a yoga therapist, educator, and founder of Creative Calm, as well as the author of Creative Calm in Your Classroom. Welcome, Lisa.
Hi, it's great to be here.
Perfect. Lisa has spent over 30 years helping children, educators, and families use mindfulness, movement, and breath to build calm and connection. Her work shows us that what begins in the classroom through self-awareness, emotional safety, and mindful relationships can ripple out into how we lead, communicate, and collaborate as adults. So in our conversation today, I'm looking to explore how the same principles that help children regulate and connect can strengthen relationships in our personal lives and workplaces. So first of all, though, I want to start with the classroom, because I know that you just came back from a conference you did for educators and people that work in the community. And I read this article that you posted called Creating Calm: Why Stress Management Must Come Before Instruction. Can you speak to that a little bit? Because I think that's the heart of what you do.
Absolutely. And I think it's the heart of what we all need to do to live happier, more stable lives, to be honest.
Yep.
I think very often, because we are creatures of habit and we are creatures who are risk averse and desire to know that what's coming next, we tend to want to control our outside environment. And when we work so hard to control our external environments, we lose the connection internally. And the internal space of regulation and the internal space of connection, it should be the foundation. So I think we need to kind of switch the way we're thinking in terms of what supports and services and accomplishments we're trying to have in the classroom or in, you know, corporate world, with this notion of self-regulation, self-care, self-alignment is the foundation. And Stephen Porges, who's a neuroscientist who in the 90s really coined this work around polyvagal theory and social engagement, says when we don't feel safe, we cannot engage socially, and therefore we cannot activate our reasoning skills, our logic skills, our executive functioning, which are the basic things we need for education, for learning, for growing. So I might argue that until we feel safe, and one of the ways we feel safe is knowing where we are and who we are and how to manage our own feelings and regulation, until we take control of that, learning is really going to be compromised. And so my hope is that we can develop skills to really feel into our own power of what we can control and how we can feel and how we interact and how we feel secure. And in that, we will all be able to connect more productively and grow more powerfully.
That's wonderful. You know, I was a teacher back in the day, and that was my kind of, if anyone ever asked me what I wanted to do when I grew up, it was always I wanted to be a teacher. So that became my logical, you know, path right out of school to university to being a teacher. I never thought anything different. But when I look at what I did as a teacher, and I taught elementary school, and what I see going on, well, first of all, as a parent, and then as a grandparent now, I never heard the term regulation. I never knew from ADHD to autism to this, that, and the other. We didn't have all that. What happened? Like, did we not know about these things? I look back and I think back of when I was a very young 21-year-old teacher in a class of 36 second graders, 36 I had. And what did I know? Like, that scares me now to think that I had that kind of responsibility and power in my class of that many kids in my classroom. and I didn't know anything.
I think in some ways none of us ever really know anything, and that
Well,
may be part of the problem
I
is we
knew
all
how
think
to,
we know a lot more now.
I knew how to
But
teach writing and reading and arithmetic, but I didn't know about the child.
yeah, well, you know what, I think a few things have happened in the evolution of our educational structure, and one is children aren't playing the way they used to play. They aren't giving this
That's true.
exploratory space to work through things, to practice social skills, but also to practice self-management and self-engagement in the same way. So they're coming into a really structured world, and we're always telling them what to do and who to be. And so I think there's a lot more play. There's a lot more space for quote downtime or rest. I think we've really done a disservice to our children in saying the more we cram into each day, the more we'll get out of them. And I think you space, probably as a teacher, you spaced things out where you added the math or the science or the writing or the reading into a day that was filled with relaxed connections and socialization and some of these other elements that we've pulled out of the classroom to make room for assessments and identification and benchmarks and expectations.
It's kind of scary, really, isn't it? So, all right. Well, you said that kids learn calm from the energy of the adults around them. And that makes total sense until I see what it does to children when we're not calm. And, I've been learning about this regulation piece and how, because my little granddaughter, she can't regulate herself, or she couldn't. She's getting better at it. But you could see the little heart just fluttering all the time. She's constantly in kind of flight, and you just want her to come, down. But then you get, not me particularly, but you get, frustrated and angry, and that just brings everything up, right? So, with the lack of cooperation or whatever from the child. So it's like this ping pong ball. And how do you have to start with yourself for sure, I think, if you are working with a child or children, but you don't have any education on that yourself. So how do what do you do?
So I think actually this is a really great point. And even though we're talking right at the moment around parent and teacher interactions with children and the sense of co-regulation, I think it's applicable to our entire set of relationships, especially in the office and in work. And I want to touch on one thing in particular. I want to ask you and our audience, because I think this is a really good way to understand what we're talking about. I want you to think to a moment where you felt really confident, really positive, really comfortable, where you felt like things were going really well. You looked in the mirror and you said, "I've got it today," right? And you were ready to go out there and get the world. And how that feels. And I want you to feel that in your body. And then I want you to imagine, and you've probably had this happen, that you're walking into a room full of people who have been arguing, who are tired, who are dysregulated, who are not aligned. And I want you to notice how that feels. And what happened to you when I mentioned that scenario? This isn't even like physically, this is just in our minds. I mentioned that scenario. What did you hold on to? What was the end result in you physically when you went into that space?
The second space, right? You're talking about, very insecure and therefore not as in control as I could have been. feeling unsure of, like when you ask, like if I'm in front of a group of people and I'm going to ask a question, you hope someone's going to respond. And right. And that when you get nothingness, how that feels, it's terrible. Am I in the right place? What did I do wrong? It's all about me, right?
Well, yeah, and so we physiologically we are wired with something called mirror neurons, and mirror neurons help us socialize, help us feel like we belong, we're getting accepted, that everything's okay. So what happens is, no matter how you feel before you walk through that door, when you come in contact with other people's energy, your mirror neurons wake up and they go, "Oh, okay, I need to feel like those people. What was I doing thinking I felt really good about myself today? I need to feel like crap. I need to feel insecure. I need to feel I'm disconnected," because we're trying to match the energy in that room. And so we don't have to have a lot of formal training, and we don't have to have a lot of tools to begin to notice that the energy that we bring and the energy that others bring impact our experiences. And the more we can notice that, the more when I'm feeling one way, I notice, oh, look at that, this is the way I'm feeling. And I notice, hey, you're feeling that way. The more I can detach and give a little check to my mirror neurons around what I need to model, the more I can be stable and I can become a force of regulation for everyone else. And this is the really key thing, because while my mirror neurons are trying to copy your dysregulated state, which is exactly what you were saying when you said that the parent automatically starts to get ramped up because they're picking up on the energetic state of their child. They're mirroring. But you also are surrounded by people whose mirror neurons want to mirror you. So if you come into that room and for that 5 seconds you go, "Whoa, this energy doesn't feel good," but you step back and say, "Okay, back into my energy," you can become the co-regulator for the group. You can help them calm. Instead of you adopting their energetic state, they adopt yours. And the more we're doing that, the more consciously we're bringing our regulated state into a group dynamic, the more they are practicing self-regulation, which comes into ultimately a state of autoregulation where we all can really swiftly move back into that regulated state. So it really takes awareness, not a whole lot of technical training.
Okay, that's exactly what I got from that. I remember when you just put me into that visual situation that I visually conjured up in my mind. I remembered the situation where I was doing a training session in a big corporation, and one of the girls in the class in this, there were maybe 16 people there. One girl was sleeping. And all I could do was focus on what am I doing wrong? Why am I putting her to sleep? Which apparently, because I talked to her afterwards, wasn't the case. She hadn't slept all night. She wasn't feeling well. She probably should have excused herself. But I took on that, and talked myself out of me being in, in a higher state, I guess, of energy. And so I totally get what you're saying. But that it takes awareness, but it also takes confidence. Yes.
And it does take some skills too. It takes some assuredness to know that I'm okay standing in the feelings and energy I'm feeling. And sometimes that might mean, okay, I'm going to take on some of their stuff, but I'm going to take it over here to the side and I'm going to work with it. Because sometimes it might still be bigger than I can take on or that I can separate from. But it also takes the capacity to access the nervous system. And this is where some training can help, not official formal training as much as just getting to know how things work in your body. But what we're really boiling this down to is nervous system engagement and activation. We're talking about, can I find a mechanism that will allow me to recognize my physiological state and then alter it so that I can affect my regulation? And the easiest way to do that is something we all have access to all the time. It's your breath. When you can pause and connect with your breath, you're taking the reins on your nervous system. So with each exhale, especially the each extended exhale, I'm telling my nervous system, okay, relax, you've got this. Activate the parasympathetic nervous system, the calm down response. Conversely, when I am in a situation where I need to remove myself or defend or protect myself, I can take a big, quick breath in and exhale it with a little force, and I can activate my sympathetic nervous system, my wake up, my active, my move response. So with just a breath practice and a connection to my breath, I can access my nervous system and I can change my physiological state, which will change my energetic state, which will allow me to reinterpret my emotional state.
Very well put. It's funny, I was watching this crazy show last night on Netflix, and the young boy was found a bow and arrow set that his mother had used when she was young, and the grandpa was watching the kid trying to do it, and he couldn't get onto the target at all. And the grandfather said to the young boy, who was maybe 15, 14, he said, before you release the arrow, he said, take a deep breath in and out. Take another breath in and on the second exhale, shoot the arrow. And he went boom, of course. Yeah.
Yes, because then you're channeling your energetic state and you're also regulating your nervous system and you're locking in your focus. I mean, it's such a simple thing, but it's something we forget all the time. And if we could go into every conversation or every encounter with a breath, I do it in the grocery store before I check out at the register. I do it as I'm connecting with people in public spaces. I do it in classrooms. I do it before I engage in any conversation with my kids now. I just take a breath. And sometimes I think that slowing down gives them a chance, even if they don't take a breath with me, it gives them a chance to kind of drop in a little bit more too.
I think
So
I saw
I'm
you do it
boosting my
before
chances that I'll be better received.
I think I saw you do that before we started here. Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly what I did. I felt my feet. I took a breath and I was just that much more aligned with, with
Love
where
it.
I was.
So
Thank you.
many adults struggle with burnout or emotional overload. Are there any mindfulness or movement practices from your book in the classroom that could help us as adults reset and reconnect, even in a business context? I think you just answered that initially, but you might want to add something to it.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to say, and this is, it might be a hard sell, but I'm going to say it anyway. I'd love to say that what I feel we are lacking in terms of stress management tools in our work environments is similar to what we're seeing in the classroom. We need play. We need sounding. We need movement. We are all sitting in chairs in front of screens, very controlled and limited. And what I'd like to see is an opportunity for more movement, more play, more creative expression. And the way we can do that, one of my favorite things that I do when I go into some of these corporate trainings is, and we can do it if you want.
Depends
So
what it
I'm
is.
gonna,
I'm
exactly.
just
So
teasing,
I'm
yeah.
gonna, I'm going to invite you to slide back from your desk for a moment, and you're welcome to do this sitting down. You're also welcome to do this standing up. If you're driving, you may want to hold off on doing this if you're listening to us in the car. But stand up or have a seat and start to feel your feet on the floor and just tap your feet alternating on the floor and notice your connection with the ground and wiggle your toes while you tap your feet. And notice how that might be a challenge,
Yes,
whether
it
you
is.
ever really do that. And then let your legs get a little more wiggly and your hips get a little more wiggly. Let your belly shake a little, your ribs twist, your shoulders shake. Take your arms and move them in whatever way feels really good. Let them shake, 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 all the way out to your fingers. Now let your head add in there, your ears and your eyes, any part of your body. Let your hair move a little. Wiggle back and forth or side to side. Go a little higher or a little lower. Shake, 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 shake. Now bring your arms out to the sides, plant your feet on the ground, and take a big breath in. Fill yourself up like a balloon, arms coming overhead, and bring your hands right down the midline as you breathe out. Yeah, let's do two more of those. Big breath in, reach your arms overhead, breathe out, hands down in front of your chest together, and one more. Big breath in and breathe it out. Slow your breath down. Pause here. Take a breath in. Breathe out. Relax your arms and just notice how you feel.
Really good. Yeah, really good. I mean, your focus was completely shifted from your head to your body, and it was freeing. Yeah, it was great. And we don't do enough of that. You're absolutely right. Now I'm
And
on
that was
video and YouTube. It's going to be really ridiculous, but it's all good. I love
that's why I did it. That's a
it.
bonus for your listeners.
Yeah.
Thank you. You can thank me later.
Yeah, there you go. So the viewers on YouTube will get the bonus. Yep. I love it. That's great. I
But I think
mean,
it's super important that I mean, that was 15 seconds. It didn't take us a long time. And I want to point out too that a lot of times people don't understand, especially because I come from a background of yoga therapy, and we do a lot with, what we call mudras, hands coming together, hand gestures. But when we do this, bringing the hands right down the midline in front of the heart, this is the quickest way to refocus the left and right hemispheres of the body and the mind. So taking that big balloon breath opens up the whole body, realigns the spine, and then coming down through the center becomes this instant lock-in. And so now I'm more focused, I'm a little more energized, I'm also simultaneously a little more calm, I'm a little more relaxed. That's when you're going to get me to be more productive. So whether it's in a classroom or a conference room, that tool is going to shift everybody and make them so much more productive.
I do remember back in the day when I was doing corporate training, I had, I guess it was an era where we had toys we'd put on the table and people would fidget toys and things like that. And we'd throw the
Absolutely.
balls to each other. I don't know if they still do those kinds of things, or I do have a, know a woman who was actually on my podcast in the first year I had it. She, Kristen, Kristen Robinson. She's all about play therapy, and she's here in Vancouver, and she's wonderful about just play in workplaces and stuff. And I see the value. Terrific. It's terrific. Yeah, definitely. So, okay, you often talk about belonging and inclusivity in schools. How can those same principles create more equitable and connected environments in companies or communities? Let's talk about that for a minute.
I really appreciate that because there's a lot of focus these days, a lot more focus on different strengths and challenges that individuals bring into their environments, into their workplaces, into their school classrooms. And we're good at recognizing, okay, kids are coming into classrooms with ADHD, with autism, with different abilities and challenges. But those kids do become adults and they don't magically grow
Change.
out of
Right.
or
Yeah.
shift those differences. And I think actually when they come into work environments, they bring a really unique gift, and they bring a perspective that's usually very helpful. But we don't talk a lot about what does inclusivity look like in our business spaces. And I think it comes down again to creating a place that feels not uniform or agreeable and equal to everyone, but that feels secure for
Safe.
everyone,
Yeah.
safe. And to do that, again, takes us right back to mirror neurons and co-regulation. If I've got 10 people in front of me and we all work differently, the best thing for me to do is to center and ground myself, to regulate the breathing, the engagement, and to offer a space in which everyone can show up as they are. One of my favorite things about yoga therapy is there is no right or wrong way to do yoga, even contrary to Western perspectives on yoga. And I love to give people the opportunity to show up in who they are. And that's how I ended up in the work I do. I did the reverse of you. When I was younger in college, I needed to pay my way through school, so I became a legal secretary. And then I took my background in psychology and I worked in human resources and law firm management for a long time. And then when I had children and I was trying to balance all those roles as wife and mother
Sure.
and business leader, I shifted over and began running my children's early childhood center, where I worked for 20 years. And what I found was the more I created spaces for people to be themselves, and the more I created opportunities for folks to explore their passion, their identity, and their unique way of doing things, the more I wanted to do it. And so I learned that putting your passion into your work, however that shows up, has value. And I think that's how we create a more inclusive space. I think we honor people's passion and differences. Sorry, my screen got
Yeah,
blurry.
and I think the good ones, the good teachers, the good managers, and so forth, they get that. They see that, right? And it's beautiful to see it when it in action, when it's working. I'm thinking now, it's funny because I didn't really love this movie, but the story in the movie is actually must be so universal that everybody loves it. And that's the movie, the first version, the first one. I haven't seen the second one, of Wicked, right? And about being different and about being accepted and about all of that stuff. And I guess that's why it's so popular, because it's right there from a very visual perspective, right? I don't know. I think I'm the only person that didn't like that movie, but it was basically because I didn't like any of the songs in the movie. I think as a musical, you want to like the songs, but
Well,
the story.
and it's a hard concept too. It's really a
Yes.
hard
Yeah.
concept, this notion of is being different a good thing?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. But
And
you know,
the
oh,
same thing in Frozen. It was the same thing in
was
Frozen.
it? Okay, see, I've never seen that one. That one never appealed to me. But now that you say that, it's like the child. Okay, so I know this is probably a conversation for another day, but when you see children who are who beat to their own drum, and they see the world differently through, right? Do they have those insecurities that they're not like the other, do you know what I'm trying to say? Or they don't care. They just.
I think it varies. I think we all care.
Yes, but
I think
yeah.
I think it registers with all of us. And the only reason I say that is because I worked a lot with children who and young adults who had more limiting, nonverbal, challenging forms of autism. And I worked with one student in particular, a young boy who I worked with into his young adulthood. And he had real challenges in controlling his body, and he communicated through a letter board. And there were very many times where I wondered if he was getting what I was teaching and where I was. And one time, his mom got in touch with me after one of our sessions, and we had been working on stretching and engaging muscles, and we were doing triangle pose, which is really challenging. And I was helping position him, and I'm very aware when I'm helping people get into a position because I want them to do it. I don't want to do it for them, right? And I don't want them to see my guidance as criticism. So anyway, so we were doing triangle pose and breathing together, and we finished our session and went on. And his mother came to me and said he used his letter board to tell me that it was the first time he felt he could connect with his body and he felt strong inside.
That's
So he was feeling the same insecurities, the same inadequacies, probably more frustration because he couldn't
articulate.
speak to me and articulate what was going on. And that's where, when I do work with those populations, I'm really focused on attuning energetically, on using far less vocabulary and languaging. I sometimes will go many minutes in a private session where I don't talk to them at all. We're just moving and breathing and connecting energetically. And I think that's the key to inclusion, is stepping back from conversation and stepping into energetically connecting.
That's beautiful. That's a great way to just end this segment, and I love it. I do have a couple more quick questions for you, and then we'll wrap up. But I can just tell from your face and from the way you speak, and you speak calmly as well, that you probably just are the best person for that child to be working with. I do. I can see that. So, just a couple of quick questions before we wrap up. So, one of the things that I love the most is curiosity. I'm always curious about different, and I think that's why I connected with you initially when we met, because I had so many questions for you. I'm curious about what you do. And so I ask you your opinion, and there's no right or wrong answer, of course, but do you think that curiosity is innate or learned? And part two, what are you most curious about today?
I think curiosity is learned and can be cultivated.
Okay.
Innate and can be
Can be
cultivated
called.
and enhanced.
Okay.
Sorry, innate. I believe that we all are naturally curious beings, which is one of the most interesting dichotomies of this existence of human being and what I call the space of and, because while we are inherently driven to be curious, we are also inherently driven to be risk averse. So curiosity and risk aversity can very often come at each other.
I've never had
And
that
I think,
answer before. That's great.
yeah, because I feel like, as we get older, we lean more into the risk aversity instead of the
Of
curiosity.
course.
And I wish we could lean more into the curiosity because then we are less fearful in the risk aversity because we know we're going to figure it out. We're going to be okay. We're going to land. So that's my thinking on that.
And what are you most curious about these days?
I am most curious about this space of and about, about how complicated and yet so simple being human really is. And I just love the act of being curious and that awe and excitement that comes with knowing that I don't know all the answers, that I can play in the space of unknown. So I'm
Beautiful.
most curious about that.
All right, one last question. Finally, for our listeners, what's one small doable step that they can take today to bring more calm, connection, and relational awareness into their own lives or workplaces?
Let's do it. Sit with a tall spine. Place one hand on your chest and one hand on your belly. Take a big breath in. Hold it there for a moment. Feel yourself full. Slowly exhale the breath out. Take one more big breath in. Hold it there for a moment. Slowly exhale it out. And either silently in your mind or out loud, say, I'm okay right now.
I'm okay right now. Beautiful. Thank you, Lisa. Thank you for being here. It was really fun to talk to you and to play with you. And where can people find you?
Createcalm.org
Perfect.
And I can toss you some social media links to add into the caption too if folks want to follow
Perfect.
me.
And your
I've got a
book.
YouTube channel and stuff.
All right, but basically they can go to your website and it'll probably all go from there. And your book, Create Calm, Creating Calm in the Classroom, is on Amazon, I think. Yes, and also on your website, probably.
You got it. Yes,
Thank you
indeed.
again. All
Thank
right,
you.
perfect. So appreciated
Thanks.
you being here. And thank you to those listeners who stayed with us till the end. And if you want more information about Lisa and her amazing work, please check her out at createcalm.org. And remember to stay connected and be remembered. Thanks for joining us. If today's show inspired you to make a new connection, why not start with me? Head over to LinkedIn and connect with me. Be sure to let me know you are a podcast listener because I select one listener each month who connects with me on LinkedIn for a complimentary profile audit. And you know I love to meet new people, so I hope you take me up on it. Don't forget to stay connected and be remembered.